From KMXT in Kodiak, it's the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Terry Haynes.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. For more information, call 1-907-235-4966 or online at alaskaboat.com.
The 2021 commercial chum salmon season is ending this week in Kotzebue, and like many fisheries across western Alaska, the catch rate has been low. KOTZ's Wesley Early has more.
It hasn't been very good.
Karen Gillis is the manager of the Copper River Seafoods Processing Plant in Kotzebue, one of two commercial chum salmon buyers in town this year.
We're very disappointed this year with the amount of fishing time and, of course, the amount of fish, and I believe everybody else is too.
Gillis says fish and game officials decreased the number of hours in each daily fishing period, which she says limited fishers' ability to get their chum. She says the hesitancy for fish and game to increase the fishing periods may have been due to record rainfall up the Kobuk River.
Perhaps the high waters were confusing the numbers, that they couldn't really see what was coming upriver. And the fish and game also did say that they couldn't do a lot of testing because of the waters were so high. So some of the numbers out perhaps weren't accurate.
Fish and game area biologist Jim Menard says that there was an issue with a test net upriver due to high water. The net was knocked out on July 24th, and officials were able to get it fixed 4 days later.
And by then, the water was so high, seems we couldn't catch anything at the test net. So we just attributed that to the high water and all the flooding up there, that the net was just sailing over the fish. So once we think the net is no longer effective and giving us good information, we just go by the commercial fishery catches.
Menard says prior to the high water, catches at the test net had been at a similar rate as last year before dropping off towards late July. He says he understands the concern from commercial buyers, but he says fish and game has other priorities.
The number one priority is to get enough up there for escapement, and two is for subsistence. And then we'll get commercials. So we have to ratchet back the commercial to make sure we have enough up there for those people who need that for their subsistence uses.
Menard says the low chum catch rate in Kotzebue is similar to how the rest of western Alaska has been this year.
Not good in Bristol Bay as far as the chums, and, though they had a credible sockeye run, the chums were not good there. We didn't have good chum runs in Kuskokwim, Yukon, Norton Sound, and so all over western Alaska, the chum salmon fared poorly this year.
Menard attributes the main issue to a poor showing of 4- and 5-year-old chums, which make up a vast majority of the fish caught.
The 2015 class was doing well, the 5-year-olds, and so when they came back in 2019 and 2020, they were fine. The 2016 class was very poor, so when that came back in 2020, it's a very low number of 4-year-olds. Well, that 4-year-old class from that brood year, we call it, when the eggs are in the gravel, that brood year, we know that's going to come back poor again in 2021.
Menard says Fish and Game will continue to monitor the conditions of the region and try to determine whether the causes of the poor season are from management or if it's a bigger ecological issue.
All you can do is put enough spawners on the spawning ground and then keep your fingers crossed that things are going to turn around out in the ocean.
As for the buyers, Gillis says they're hoping that next year's season will turn around. Reporting in Kotzebue, I'm Wesley Early.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org or 907-747-3287.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
There are dozens, if not scores, of different species of rockfish in the Gulf of Alaska. There are directed fisheries for some species, and they are often caught as bycatch in longline fisheries. They are also a popular sport fish targeted by blue water anglers. But many of them look an awful lot alike, which makes recording of catches complicated. KBBI's Jay Barrett has more on what Fish and Game is doing to get a better understanding of the stock.
Now the Alaska Department of Fish and Game is working to combine information from sport and commercial fisheries to get a better understanding of the Gulf's rockfish populations. The program is called the Rockfish Initiative. Jan Rumble is the area management biologist for shellfish and groundfish in Prince William Sound and Cook Inlet.
The issues that we're looking at and why we formed our group include a decreased abundance of other popular fish in Alaskan waters that has led to increased harvest of some of our rockfish species.
Rumble says rockfish can have very long lifespans, and since the older fish are the more successful reproductively, the stocks can be susceptible to overfishing.
Many of the species of rockfish can live to be more than 6 years old. So we have this issue, and we don't have any overarching rockfish management for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. So these issues are why we formed this initiative to try to solve some of our questions.
Rumble said the initiative will start with two species of rockfish, the yellow eye and the black rockfish. Martin Schuster is the groundfish sampling supervisor for Fish and Game Sports Fish Division in South Central Alaska. He said it's exciting to have both sport and commercial fishery divisions working together to make one plan.
So that we have hopefully an allocation for both user groups that will then be divided and fished.
Elisa Russ is the assistant commercial fisheries management biologist for shellfish and groundfish in the area, as well as the port sampling coordinator.
It's confidential information that we're collecting in commercial fisheries, and so we're very careful about all of that. But additionally, we're always training the constant turnover of dock crew for these different processors that are buying the fish to identify the rockfish. So that's like a big, huge thing that's been a big part of, you know, I've been in my position for over a decade, and that's been something I really have worked hard on. And I feel like we've had success, number one, in communication with the fleet, you know, in having a rapport, and then also with identification of rockfish at the dock.
And that's where the large number of rockfish species comes into play, making sorting them on the dock complicated.
All the fish have to be sorted to species. It doesn't matter how many rockfish species they are. Just like salmon, they have to be sorted to species. And, you know, that had been a grumbling at a time, but it's very critical that we get that, you know, speciated properly. Everything is weighed separately. Everything is reported on this fish ticket. This immediately goes into this electronic system called eLandings, this database. It's actually accessible by both federal and state fisheries agencies.
Fish and Game has got a kind of unique tool to help folks identify whatever rockfish they may haul up. It's a deck of playing cards with species-specific information on the many kinds of rockfish that live in our waters. Rumble says they're available at your local Fish and Game office. For KBBI and Homer, I'm Jay Barrett.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Madsen, providing twice-weekly service to Alaska's Emerald Isle.
Trawlers cast wide nets, and they often catch more than the species they're targeting. That's called bycatch. It's one of the longest-running controversies in the fleet and a vexing problem for fisheries managers. Now, Alaska's governor is wading into the debate by naming a task force to study the issue. KSTK's Sage Smiley reports.
Governor Mike Dunleavy's office recently announced it's setting up a task force to tackle the thorny issue of bycatch. Federal data show trawl fisheries this year in the Bering Sea and Gulf of Alaska have caught tens of thousands of Chinook salmon, millions of pounds of halibut, and in the case of the Bering Sea trawl fisheries, hundreds of thousands of crabs. Stocks of staple species like Chinook salmon, red keen crab, and halibut have been on the decline, forcing subsistence sport and commercial fishermen to pack up nets or reduce harvest. Alaska Fish and Game Commissioner Doug Vincent Ling says his boss has taken notice.
I think the governor was hearing loud and clear that there was just a lot of noise around the issue of bycatch, and I think he wanted to get Alaskans together to discuss what the issue is, what we know about it, what we don't know about it, and identify, you know, different strategies that we all could take to try to reduce bycatch or manage bycatch better to hopefully have sustainable fisheries over time. And that may not necessarily result in a reduction. I think it's how you manage bycatch moving forward.
Most bycatch happens in federal waters beyond the 3-mile line, but it does occur in state fisheries too. Why convene a state task force when it's a primarily federal fishery management issue?
Many of the people that are involved with bycatch are Alaskan-based fishermen, so we know that they have a lot of expertise and information that they can bring to the table, and maybe fresh ideas will emerge about how to better manage bycatch in the future.
The executive order establishing the task force says its goal is to study the impacts of bycatch on what it calls high-value state fisheries, recommend policies based on that impact, advise state agencies how to better use resources to address bycatch, and use science to inform policymakers and the public about how bycatch is felt in Alaska fisheries. Vincent Lang says that designation of high value is meant to be a more expansive metric than simple cash value.
Value to coastal communities in terms of jobs and collateral benefits of the value back from collected fish taxes to those communities. It could have a high value for food security. It could have a high value for cultural purposes.
The task force will be made up of 13 voting members, all appointed by the governor from a pool of applicants, and 2 non-voting members from the state legislature, nominated by the leadership of the House and Senate. The chair and vice chair of the task force aren't set yet. They'll be selected by the governor once the voting seats are filled. Representation on the task force is meant to capture a sample size swath of Alaska fishing interests. That means seats for state administration officials, various fisheries, Alaska Native organizations, and the general public. But bycatch critics warned that its effectiveness will depend on its composition.
That task force initiative is definitely welcome, and it shows a level of commitment from the governor's office, which we've rarely seen.
David Bays is a longtime sport charter business owner in Homer. He's also an online activist of sorts, moderating a lively Facebook group called Stop Alaskan Trawler Bycatch that has more than 15,000 people signed up.
We've seen a lot of times, especially at the NPFMC, that undercurrents of the trawl industry run pretty deep in Alaska commerce and politics.
He's talking about the North Pacific Fishery Management Council, which has been criticized for giving too much clout to big money industry trawlers who are responsible for much of Alaska's bycatch.
One of the named seats or positioned on there is a representative from the NPFMC. And, you know, a big question to me is the purpose of that representative going to be to facilitate the task force access to raw council data? Or is that person acting as a representative of the Department of Commerce? You know, and there's also a trawl rep on there. And again, it's kind of this question of, are they speaking towards conventions and practicability in the industry, or are they going to try and derail the conversation by saying it's all a facade, you know, or something that we shouldn't worry about in the first place?
The bycatch task force won't have funding to allocate towards research, but Vincent Lang says it's a piece of the puzzle that will come once it issues its recommendations to state and federal policymakers next year. It's up against the deadline of November 2022, when it will be dissolved.
Funding, it will probably be some joint effort between industries associated with bycatch, users, as well as state and federal efforts. But before we identify the money for it, we need to identify what it is we want to do.
Vincent Lang says he hopes the administration can convene the group early next year to meet on a monthly basis, as outlined in the governor's order. The governor's office is accepting applications to serve on its new bycatch task force until December 3rd. In Wrangell, I'm Sage Smiley.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund in recognition of the fishing industry, which provides over 58,000 Alaskan jobs from a renewable source.